Hi, it's Quinn, and you're listening to Not So Bloody Mary, the show about women in history with negative reputations. Enjoy the show!
Okay.
Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
Great.
Oh, I feel like it's been... Literally, well, I'm okay, but I feel like it's been a year since I've done this, so.
It has
been an entire year. Let's each take turns and recap what's gone on in our lives since we last recorded. For context, Grace, we last recorded at the beginning of July. It's October. I worked at a summer camp for the entire summer, and I made friends that are all, like, at least 4 years older than me, and that's not weird at all. I broke my arm by dropping a weight on it at the same day that my friend broke her leg, and then I started grade 11, and I'm doing cross country, and my arm healed, and then I sprained the muscles and ligaments in my thumb, and, I started my in-car driving lessons, and my driving teacher scares me. And if he's listening, you're great. And that's kind of all that happened. I don't really think anything else that was that, like, super that was exciting really happened to me. I guess I don't know. Nothing exciting happened. Literally at all. Oh, and now I'm working at Plunge, which is the pool that is at the mountain that I did the camp at all summer, and I get screamed at for minimum wage. So yay. Okay, it's Grace's turn.
Yay. Okay. I started grade 11. it was my birthday, and I still haven't done my driver's test.
Woo!
I'm having a great time.
You worked at Dunstern this summer. I ran through the place where you worked on Thursday.
I did work there.
Yeah.
That was
I contemplated my life's choices while I ran through that forest.
Oh.
Well, there's some massive hills there, and I was like, why do I do this? Why do I run for 6 kilometers for fun? Anyways, Grace, what's the most exciting thing that happened in your life in, like, the last week?
I made plans to play D&D.
That is not what I was talking about. You got a puppy.
Oh, I did.
Your puppy's crying now. Yeah, Lucy's crying in the corner because you forgot about her.
Lucy's not allowed upstairs yet.
She's crying downstairs. She knows. I'll tell her when I see her.
I brought her outside and she was, like, eating the hostas.
Aw. I don't think those are good for her, but that's still cute.
Yeah, not really.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're back. It's been a long time.
A very long time.
I blame life.
Life.
And the fact that we are not always in charge of our own schedules because we are teenagers. And yes, also that I get tired and don't want to do things. And I call that controlling my life the way that I want to do it. But we've gotten a lot of new listeners, even though we literally were not recording anything. So thanks to that. Good job, guys. I'm going to assume they found us on TikTok because I don't post anywhere else right now. So thanks for coming over from TikTok. Thanks to the random people that I've had interactions with on TikTok that ask really weird questions. And also the, like, 50 plus people that have commented on our TikTok saying that they're related to Mary Queen of Scots somehow.
Hey.
She literally made, like, one kid. You cannot all be related to her. Everybody needs to calm down. if you are related to Mary Queen of Scots, very exciting for you, but I don't think all of you are. I think you're just from Scotland, Anyways, so much fun. We're back with Catherine Howard Part 5.
Bestie Catherine.
Bestie Catherine. I'd also like to make an honorable mention to the fact that today it is October 16th, and right now, what year is it? 2021. Right now, 486 years ago, Jane Seymour was lying in her deathbed after delivering her son. She's not actually going to die for like 8 more days, but I'm sure this is probably the time when she was like starting to get better. But rest in peace to Jane. I don't know if we'll ever actually cover you on this show, but maybe we will someday, and we can have a fun time talking about you. I love you, Jane, by the way. Just, you know, sometimes. But yeah, I do feel bad for the fact that she died. So today is, you know, a sad day for Jane Seymour. When it's actually her death day, I'll post something for you, Jane. I'll give you that.
It's the least we can do.
It's the least we can do, especially since I make fun of you on our TikTok all the time.
Yes.
Sorry about that, huh? It is, because it's funny, because mostly I talk about how her son died and didn't do anything, and then Elizabeth and Mary took over, because we're a Mary Stan podcast. And Jane Seymour, Jane was also a Mary Stan, so we love her for that. Catherine Howard, not so much of a Mary Stan. Mary also hated her. They were not fans of each other, if we remember that from some of our previous episodes.
This is true.
But right now, you guys, we left her, and Henry just, like, found out about her previous affairs before she was married. So I guess, like, romantic flings with Francis Dearman Henry Mannix. And he's mad because he's Henry. Mad. I don't really think he has the right to be mad, but, like, I mean, it is, like, 1541, and so, like, most women that he was marrying did not have anything with anyone else before him, except for Catherine Parr, because she had already been widowed, like, two times, but, yeah, Henry's not doing so hot. He's pretty upset, actually. After he finds out that Catherine, you know, had other lovers other than him, he went on a hunting trip. He was like, bye, besties. I'm out of here. Not doing so hot. He's pretty upset. And then he went to the Palace of Whitehall, which was empty. He was just like, bye, I'm done. And this is like the time that there's that legend that is preserved in tours of Hampton Court. There's like the haunted gallery in Hampton Court, which is the legend that when Catherine realized just how like dangerous the position she was in was, she literally like sprinted past the guards at her apartments, ran down the gallery that ran past like Henry's church entrance, like his chapel and his privy council chamber. She just like ran around screaming and was like, Henry, no, like, don't do this to me. If you watched in the Tudors, it made me cry and it was really sad. Good job to that actress. I don't remember what her name was. But then she was caught by her guards and she was dragged away screaming before she could reach her husband. So there's like a legend that if you go to Hampton Court and you like stand in that gallery, some people have like fainted, I think, and you can like hear her screams. And in the Elizabeth I Red Rose of the House of Tudor book that got me obsessed with all of this, Elizabeth was in the gallery and like saw her ghost or something. It was a whole thing. So if that happened, it would have happened on November 6th, the Sunday, because, you know, that's when we place it. And it had been 3 or 4 days of kind of nervous uncertainty that pushed her over the edge because she was locked in her chambers and didn't really know what was going on. That's so fun for her.
Right.
So fun. And then on that Sunday, she found out for the first time what was actually going on, like what was wrong. Archbishop Cranmer was like, hey, Catherine, can I please see you? We got to talk to you. And the people on this delegation that were talking to her were him, The Lord Chancellor, the Dukes of Norfolk and Suffolk, which is her, God, is your uncle? No, her great uncle, I think. No, it's her uncle. There's too many Norfolks and Howards and Boleyns and all of them. And then obviously Charles Brandon, and then Bishop Gardiner, who I don't even know what to think about Bishop Gardiner. Mary loved him, I'll tell you that. That gives you all you need to know. Mary loved him and he hated Catherine Parr. They like told Catherine, they're like, so Catherine, something has come to our attention. There's an indication that you might have been pre-contracted to marry Francis Dereham. He's since served in your household, and so he might have a legal claim to being your husband. And she was like, no, that's not true. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Goodbye. So they left. They were like, okay, thanks, Catherine. Bye. But then Cranmer was like, all right, this girl is like 17, 18, 19, around there. She's not going to tell us the truth if we corner her in front of a whole bunch of people. So he comes back privately to see her several times over the next like 24 hours, which like that was kind of nice, I guess, to not make her say it in front of everybody. And he got her to confess eventually. He like talked about this. I don't know if he wrote it down, but his own account of his meetings with her kind of described how he started with just, he really wanted his strategy that he had decided that he was going to go with was just talking about how bad her misdemeanors were, like exaggerating how terrible they were and like what could happen to her, because he was hoping that if Catherine was afraid of what could happen, she would make a full and honest confession. But then he like got into her apartments and he was like, oh no, that would be counterproductive and it would also be really cruel. That would not be very nice. She is not doing so hot. She is having massive mood swings. And there's a lot of the time she's in total hysterics. Like, she is absolutely, like, you're not getting anything out of her. So when she's in this state, he can't get any kind of coherent response from her. So he can't even understand what she's saying. That doesn't sound very good. So she needs therapy. Get her therapy right now. But they don't have therapy because it's 1541. He wrote in his report for the king, this is a quote from him, at my repair onto the queen's grace, I found her in such lamentation and heaviness as I never saw no creature, so that it would have pitied any man's heart in the world to have looked upon her. And in the vehement rage, she continued, as they informed me, which be about her, from my departure from her unto my return again, and then I found her, as I do suppose, far interred towards a frenzy. So basically, she was mad, upset, crazy, well, not doing so hot. Literally, he leaves, he comes back, and she's been like that the whole time. So she, like, is not stopping. She, there's a worry that she's going to have, like, a complete shattering of her mind. But it is avoided, luckily, and it's only narrowly avoided in Cranmer's opinion, when the king sent a messenger, and it was like, hey, Catherine, if you, like, confess and just tell the truth, Henry will be merciful towards you. And so she was like, oh, okay, all right. Apparently she flung her hands in the air and gave most humble thanks unto your majesty for showing her more kindness than she claimed she had any right to ask for. And then her mood kind of calmed down, but she still, like, cried a lot. And then she collapsed into a new rage, so she was much worse than she was before. But then he started soothing her, and so he finally got her to sit. But this, like, thanking Henry for being merciful and kind just reminds me of when Anne was like, oh, do I go into a dungeon? And they were like, no, you get to stay in a room. You're still the queen. And she's like, oh my God, Jesus, have mercy on me. The king is too good to me. Ladies, stop making yourself seem more guilty than you already are. God.
Sad scene of the Tudors in Rome.
Yeah. Where, once again, where is her Emmy? Where is it?
Like, she deserves it.
Like, where is she now? What is she doing? That stupid Pets movie. fallen so far, Natalie. I really need her to do another movie or a TV show.
I think like, when we watched it, I literally fell asleep.
I just stayed awake to hear her voice coming from that cat. It was really weird. Yeah, but she was so good in The Tudors. Now I'm going to freaking start watching The Tudors again. I'm going to get back in my obsession. This is not good, you guys. Oh, my God. But anyways, Catherine, her first confession doesn't survive. But there is a, she did a second one and a third one. And the second one, which basically apparently confirms what she had said previously to Cranmer, does survive. So this is, here's some parts of it. It is written in old-fashioned writing, but I'm pretty sure that we can all figure this out. So, examined whether I called him husband and he called me wife. So, this is about Francis Dereham, and it's because they apparently call each other husband and wife. And so, according to Henry and his ministers, that's binding, I guess. I don't know. I do answer that there was communication in the house that we two should marry together, and some of his enemies had envy thereat. Wherefore, he desired me to give him leave to call me wife and that I would call him husband, and I said I was content. And so after that, commonly he called me wife and many times I called him husband. This just seems like a little nickname that they had for each other, that they were just like, oh, wife, can you get me this? And she was like, sure, husband. Weird, but it seems like a normal couple nickname. It's weird, right. But, you know, not illegal. As for carnal knowledge, I confess, as I did before, that divers times he hath lain with me, sometime in his doublet and hose, and two or three times naked. So, yeah, they slept together. They have carnal knowledge of each other. Oh, no. As for the communication of my going to the court, so they were, like, upset that, like, when she went to court, they were like, oh, well, what happened there? And she said, I remember that he said to me that if I were gone, he would not tarry long in the house. He wasn't going to stay in her step-grandma's house for very long after she left. And she was like, all right. That she said again that he might do as he lists. So she's like, we are broken up, Francis. Do what you want. I don't care. That's your translation. And then as for the communication after his coming out of Ireland, so there was a thing that they were like, oh, well, he told you that he was coming out of Ireland because when he went to Ireland, she, like, took care of his money, I think. Because he didn't really know anybody else. And so she's like, no, I didn't talk to him after he got out of Ireland and gave him this job. But as far as she remembers, he then asked me if I should be married to Mr. Culpepper, for he said he had heard reported. Then I made answer, what should you trouble me therewith? For you know I will not have you. And if you heard such report, you heard more than I do now. So he was like, are you going to get married to Thomas? And she was like, why do you care? I'm not going to marry you, so it has nothing to do with you. And I have heard literally nothing about this. Once again, turning him down. Little rude, but I bet you he was one of those really annoying people that just follows you around and you're like, please stop. I don't want to be with you. I can think of like three people that I can, you know, pinpoint that on. Once Sir Edward Baynton, who I'm pretty sure that's her sister's husband, when he came back to the Queen's rooms, he told Cranmer that after like he left, Cranmer left, it's okay, Grace, you're having an allergic reaction to your puppy's fur. after Cranmer left, then she was like, oh, no. This isn't true. I lied. I was lying. I didn't do any of that. And so, this is when she says that, Francis Dereham had repeatedly raped her and that at no point in her time in the Dowager's household had she been a willing partner to either of her alleged lovers.
Oh.
Yeah. But, okay, there were, like, mistakes in Catherine's previous letter. Like, she forgot when Francis went to Ireland because she, like, messed that up. Right. But this confession has a lot of mistakes in it because she contradicts 8 or 9 other people's, like, other witnesses, like, their affidavits. They're all of these people have been kept separate from one another so that they don't figure out like what each other are saying. And all these other people are saying the exact same thing, and she's saying something different. Not saying that she was not sexually assaulted, but I'm just saying that this confession has some mistakes in it. So there's some things that were like, okay. So most likely she was freaking terrified. And so she was like, Francis, I'm throwing you to the wolves and I'm saving myself, which I would too. She obviously has no feelings left for this man because she's hated him for like multiple years because she's been like, stop following me around, you weirdo. I said no. So she was like, you can die. I'm staying alive. Same.
Literally.
Cranmer feels really bad for her, but he also is like, she definitely lied to me like at least one time. He's like, I don't know what it was about, but she definitely lied to me. And so that makes him suspect that everything else could also be a lie. Like every single thing she said in all of her confessions. And so he's like, why would she have talked about Culpepper? Because they didn't ask her about Culpepper. Like they don't know anything about him yet. So he's like, why is she talking about Culpepper and her relation to Dirham when she's talking about Dirham and the question of marriage with him, unless there was something between her and Culpepper? Dot, dot, dot. But now Catherine, we're going to switch back to her. She is in her apartments. They're really quiet, which is really weird because she usually is like dancing all around and having a grand old time. One of my favorite scenes in season 4 of The Tudors is when she's like dancing around in her apartments with like all these people and having a great time. There's musicians in there and Henry's watching through the door. And it's like an exact flashback to when he was watching Anne through the door when she was doing that before he came in and had sex with her. And then they conceived their last child. But in this one, I'm pretty sure he like turns away and he's angry because it reminds him of Anne. They do so many things in that season that like you can tell he's thinking about her. And it's so good. Good directing. Good choices. Proud of them. But yeah, so her apartment is like really weird and quiet and uncomfortable. But she still does have her, like, staff and her ladies, which, you know, is good for her because I don't think she would know how to do anything by herself. No offense, Catherine, but you were very privileged for most of your life. Because, you know, you always had servants. And so she still has her staff, which means she still has Lady Rochford there. And so she speaks to Lady Rochford privately literally every opportunity she has. I feel like maybe we shouldn't have done that because that pinpoints more of the guilt on Lady Rochford as well, but all right. When she's talking to Lady Rochford, she is sometimes super confident and about like, oh, if the council finds out about me and Culpepper, it'll be totally fine. And then sometimes she's like, oh my God, they're going to kill me if they find out. I will die. Lady Rochford loyally promises she's going to turn her mind a little bit later, but she's like, rather than betray you, I will be torn with wild horses. Okay. I would betray her personally rather than be torn apart with wild horses. But you do you. Go, Jane. Get it, I guess. By Tuesday, Hampton Court is under close guard because they're trying to figure out how to get rid of all Catherine's ladies. So some of them, I guess, live too far away or don't have a spot at home for them because some of them are going to be sent to nearby friends and then the rest of them are going to be like sent home. And she is going to be moved to Sion Abbey, which is an old convent on the north bank of the Thames where she was to be housed until, you know, they figured things out with her. She was supposed to be treated like a queen state-wise, but her furniture was supposed to be modest and she was getting her household cut dramatically. She's only allowed to pick 4 gentlewomen and 2 chamberers, and one of the women had to be her sister, Lady Isabella Baynton, and her husband, like Edward, was sent to be in charge of Catherine's household, and they would depart on Monday the 14th. So basically they're trying to get her out of there so that they can figure out what to do about her. So fun. And because this is a court, and a court is a high school, just with much richer people, there's a lot of rumors all around the court. Here are some of the rumors that they've got going on. Some people are like, oh my God, the queen's going to be divorced. This is terrible for Henry, 5th wife. What is he doing? Another rumor is that the physicians had discovered that she was barren. She can't have kids, so Henry's getting rid of her. He needs that spare. Another one is that Anne of Cleves is going to be restored. Henry's decided that he actually wants her back. He's going to get rid of Catherine. Then there's that she'd been previously married to another man. That's like the closest to what's actually going on right now. And then the final one that was listed was that she had enjoyed 8 or 9 lovers before her marriage. How often do these people think she's seen lovers? She's like 17. Like, God. But obviously not true. Then sometime between the orders that were being given to move Catherine from Hampton to Sion and the dispatching of the official notifications of what was going on to the English embassies abroad, the case shifted. On the evening of the 11th of November, it is still seeming to be an investigation into her adolescence, as late as in the evening, because that was when the directive was given to move her. But by the next day, the council were hinting in their letters that there was an appearance of a greater abomination. Culpepper. His name is Thomas. In a letter to Paris written on the 22nd, Charles de Marillac, I'm pretty sure that was the French ambassador man, remember him from Mary's episodes, he wrote that the change in the investigation was initiated by an unexpected revelation from Francis Dereham, who said that to show his innocence since the marriage, said that Culpepper had succeeded him in the Queen's affections. So he was like, no, you guys, like, since I've gotten married, I haven't done anything. I've left her alone. I've been so nice. And she doesn't even care about me anymore. She cares about Thomas Culpepper. And they're like, hold up. What? So, I mean, I would also throw Culpepper under the bus if I was Francis Dereham, because he probably thought that they wouldn't care as much about him. And so they wouldn't kill him. He'd just get, like, exiled and wouldn't be allowed back at court. And Culpepper would die. Once again, saving yourself so that someone else takes the fall. It's court. It's literally like Game of Thrones. So you just got to do what you got to do. Thomas Culpepper, weirdo man, goes hawking on the 11th. So he goes hunting. He's like, bye, I'm leaving this court. Probably on purpose, because, you know, he knows what's going down. But 2 days later, he's summoned to his first interrogation. In a letter written on the evening of the 12th and sent to the clerk of the Privy Council, Sir William Page, and then a T, the council summed up their collective attitude towards the Queen at the moment and says, now may you see what was done before the marriage. God knoweth what hath been done sithence. So it's not looking so hot, love. Not doing so well. Now, on the Saturday, the 12th of November, she's visited by Cranmer, her uncle, the Earls of Southampton, Sussex, and Hertford, Lord Russell, and 5 other members of the Privy Council. That is a lot of people. Like, yeah. Go home. That's like 11 people. They all just, I guess, pile into her room, and they're like, what are you doing? We want to know about 3 nocturnal meetings that you allegedly had with Thomas Culpepper during the royal progress. And Lady Rochford is now getting the blame because Catherine loves to throw people under the bus because she's a teenager and that's what we do. She's like, oh, well, it was all her fault. She was the one who was like, well, Culpepper really, really loves you. He just wants to talk to you. You should speak to Culpepper. And you need to talk to him. All he wants to do is speak with you. And she swore on a book that he meant nothing but honesty. Catherine, you chose to go there. Babes, also, I bet you Lady Rochford, she was, I'm going to say that she probably meddled because man was a gossip. But Catherine was the one that was showing the attraction to Thomas Culpepper in the first place. Catherine admitted to the counselors that Lady Rochford had found rooms or backstairs every single stop on the progress for the Queen's meetings with Culpepper, but she conveniently failed to mention the fact that she was bugging Lady Rochford literally all the time for more news about when she could meet Culpepper next. I mean, yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do, I guess. She also told the counselors that she had been living in fear since they had started investigating her private life, and that Lady Rochford had advised her never to tell about their conversations with Culpepper. This version of events was later repeated by Lady Rochford, and it wasn't really much of a surprise when she remembered that it was the Queen who had advised silence and she who had initiated most of the earlier meetings. So basically, Catherine was like, no, Lady Rochford did all of it. And the counselors were like, uh-huh. And then Lady Rochford was like, no, it was Catherine. I just did what she told me to do because she's my queen. And they're like, that's more like it. So, don't know. Don't know what was really happening there, but they need to get on the same page. I'm just saying.
Indeed.
That's like the number one rule, is be on the same page. But the investigations into Catherine can be like divided really broadly into three successive phases. So the first one is the 2nd of November to the 11th of November. And that's just trying to figure out, did she have a pre-contract to Francis Dereham? Did this make her legally ineligible to marry anyone else? And it's prompted by Mary Hall's revelations to John Lascelles. The second one, from the 12th of November to the 1st of December, was trying to figure out if she had committed adultery, either with Francis Dereham or Thomas Culpepper. This started with Francis's confessions, then the confessions of the Queen, then Catherine's confession was used to get Catherine Tilney, who was that maid that was like used by Catherine and also was kind of upset because Lady Rochford was getting all the attention into testifying. And then she probably completed the circle because she was the source of the information about Culpepper that was originally imparted to the Privy Council by Francis Dereham. So then the third like thrust of the prosecution, which was gathering momentum basically until the 22nd of December, but had been talked about since early November, was to determine how much the Howard family itself had known, and if as a result of that knowledge they had conspired to commit treason by telling Catherine to hire Dereham, her former lover. So, you know, they're like, well, right. Did Norfolk know? Did Grandma know? Did all these other people know? But that second stage to like try and figure out what had happened with Culpepper was settled by the questioning of Thomas Culpepper and Lady Rochford. It's impossible to judge if Thomas Culpepper decided that like only honesty could save him or if he was like a stupid liar. Admittedly, he didn't really have any like leeway for denial, like because everyone was talking about him. And so they searched his rooms because they can do that. That would be, you know, enough warrant for a search warrant, I guess. Don't know. Gotta ask my law teacher if that's okay. They search his rooms and they find the letter that Catherine sent him when he was sick that was like, Thomas, I miss you. I can't sleep without thinking of you. I long to have you in my arms again. And they're like, what is this? Catherine, what is this, babes? If it was foolish of Catherine to have written it, it was even more stupid for Culpepper to have kept it. Why would you keep that? Like, burn it. Like, God, yeah. That's going to kill you and her, you dummy. Just remember in your heart. At his interview on November the 13th, he told the counselors literally about everything. From their first meeting at Greenwich on Maundy Thursday to the Queen's pleas that he didn't divulge their relationship when he made confession. His memory kind of thought that the Queen and Lady Rochford were equal partners in the affair. But he didn't say this to like paint himself as like their pawn. He knew that meeting at night in a toilet didn't suggest that they had pure intent. He was not stupid. He was just kind of dumb. He claimed that he and Catherine hadn't slept together. So they hadn't committed treason by sleeping together. Although he did intend and meant to sleep with her, and that likewise Catherine felt exactly the same way. I don't know if he knew if Catherine actually felt this way or if he is just cocky and was like, yeah, you know, the women can't stay away from me, they all want to sleep with me. This sort of claim that they would have slept together at some point in the future is kind of like the crux of deciding if he was confessing honestly or if he was pursuing a strategy of lying that sounded so shameful that his accusers might assume it was the truth. Adultery with the queen or with the princess of Wales is treason because it endangers the succession. Because obviously if the queen has a baby that's not the king's, then
right,
you're putting the non-royal kid on the throne, because normally the king is the one that has the actual, like, divine right.
Yeah.
So since he hasn't actually slept with her yet, he hasn't physically endangered the royal bloodline. So if he thinks that this is what's going to save him, he obviously is not smart in the matter of law, because misprision of treason, like, intention to commit is still treason. Like, intention to commit murder, you're still going to get in trouble for that. So if he says, like, he was stupid, he was like, yeah, I still intended to sleep with her. We're going to do it eventually. So when he said that, the Earl of Hertford, Edward Seymour, was like, that is already too much. So, you know, he gets sent to the Tower. Rip. And his goods and houses get taken away and inventoried. And this is a sign that the Tudor court takes, is like, you're going to die soon. Bye. Because they're used to it. They know what happens now. Lady Rochford's testimonies, on the other hand, have more in common with the Queen's than with Culpepper's. Like Catherine, she tries to claim a lot of ignorance of things that no person in her position would have missed. She really was like, I have no idea. And they're like, you were there every single time. What are you doing? She might have been telling the truth when she said that she had slept through most of the reunions that they had, like, at night, because, you know, she could be tired. She's been working for Catherine all day. I would say Catherine was probably not an easy person to be a servant for.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's like, I didn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. But that also didn't really match up with her only thing that, like, the only deviation that she had from Culpepper and Catherine's testimonies. She said that she thought that Thomas had known Catherine currently. So they had had sex. Both of them said that they hadn't. But she also was like, I slept through the whole thing. So what are you doing here? Like, okay. Literally. Afterwards, she gets sent to the Tower and her goods are inventoried. I don't think she really had that much, because I'm pretty sure after George Boleyn died, she literally was, like, dirt poor for, like, a noble woman of her status, which is really sad, because it's not her fault that Henry was out to murder her entire family that she married into. He has a death wish for all of them. But the tale that she has that is obviously, like, different from Catherine and Thomas, which she wisely prefixed with the caveat that it's only in her opinion. She's like, I do think they slept together, but it's only in my opinion. And it's only based on because they act, like, really touchy-feely with each other. So I think they've had sex. She's like, only my opinion, though. Don't take it up with me. And the counselors don't really care. They're like, that doesn't really make any difference to us. As far as they're concerned, she's not telling them anything they don't already know. They're like, bye, go to the Tower. We don't really care. But for, like, a historian, her suggestion is more, like, interesting, because she can't be dismissed as a liar intent on stirring up trouble for the queen. She could have, just been there to raise hell for Catherine. Had she been thinking clearly and she had been willing to fib her way out of it, her surest bet was parodying the line that no physical intimacy had ever taken place. Like, she could have saved all of them, maybe saved her, I don't know. But she also might have been, we have to remember that she was, like, a woman who already had already lost people to, like, this sort of thing. And so her mental state probably wasn't super hot. And she probably did care for Catherine in some sort of way. So she's probably a little concerned about that. And counselors are kind of scary. We watched the Tudors. We saw how they interviewed Madge. Do you remember how mean they were to Madge?
Yeah, that was so sad.
So she could have been, like, coerced into giving this statement by the intimidation of the counselors. They could have been really mean to her and gotten her to say it. Or they could have been like, if you say this, we'll give you mercy, which is what is actually, like, that's what happens in the real law that I'm studying right now. Like, if you're like, oh, well, you know, like, you can get a deal if you're like, oh, yeah, I'll give you that information if you promise that I won't die. So they could have told her that, but have been lying because it's not legally binding because it's 1541 and also they're not lawyers. So she might have told them, though, of her own volition what she thought they wanted to hear. So she might have thought that if she said this, they wouldn't kill her.
Yeah.
Or she might have told the truth. We don't know. Catherine and Thomas might have both been lying to save their asses. She might have been like, I'm pretty sure they had sex. But, you know, her truth, yeah. We don't know. Her validity is undercut by her mental state because she gets sent to the Tower of London where her husband and her sister-in-law, who we, there, most of the evidence assumes that she was close to them. She suffers a nervous breakdown because she's in the tower and she knows a lot of people that have died here. So 3 days into her incarceration, she gets seized by a fit of madness from which her brain is affected, according to like the doctors that checked her up. So she is like severely mentally unwell. Mm-hmm. And because it's illegal to execute the insane, you can't kill them because they're like, they don't know what they're doing. You can't kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Jane gets moved out of her prison and into the care of the Lord Admiral's wife, Lady Russell. And so she gets to live in like a mansion. But let's be real. She's not like being treated very nicely because Chapuis told the emperor that the king makes sure that Lady Rochford is visited by Henry's own doctors every single day just because he desires her recovery so that he can have her executed afterwards as an example and a warning to others.
Jeez.
So basically, she's a calf being fattened for the slaughter. They're nursing and tending her back to health just so that they can kill her.
That's awful.
Yeah, it is awful. I hate them. I love her. I think. I don't really know.
You stand her.
I try to stand her. I try my very best. In the next phase of the interrogations, many of the previous witnesses were brought back for another round of questioning. Like, things are just going so, so fast. But, you know, Henry and his counselors are now believing, like, what's going on. Henry didn't believe it at first. But when Cranmer told Henry on the 12th of November, Henry did not believe that the closest physical contact his wife had ever had with Thomas Culpepper was a kiss on the hand. I would say Henry's probably right. I would say they probably at least kissed or hugged.
Yeah.
They like secret meetings all the time. And she's like, no, I only ever kissed him on the hand. Henry, I'm on your side for this one time. Only time I'll ever be on your side, buddy. I think that you can think of this. And also, I do kind of think like, yes, he's very hypocritical because he cheats all the time. But, like, wives aren't really allowed to cheat back then if they're queens. So I kind of feel bad because he's being cheated on. And that's not very fun for anybody. But now he's getting a taste of his own medicine. And his wives can't murder him if he cheats on them. So,
yeah.
You know. But, so fun. For the council, the issue of whether or not Catherine slept with Thomas was settled pretty quickly. There was proof and a confession of intent, and that was enough to condemn them. So fun. For the government, the question that they didn't really have answered wasn't Culpepper, but what had gone on with Dereham. So Henry is, like, completely certain, and a lot of his counselors were as well, that the fact that Catherine decided to give him a job and the fact that her relatives were apparently pretty friendly towards him torpedoed Catherine's claims of rape and instead suggested a conspiracy to allow Francis back into her bed. Maybe she employed him because she was afraid of him, Henry. What do you think about that? But, yeah, this is why several witnesses who really didn't – they had no idea of what Catherine was like after she left Lambeth were all fetched following the 13th of November. They were trying to get, like, literally anybody that could be connected to the case to try and uncover some stuff. Henry wanted proof of just how much the Howards knew of what had happened between Catherine and Dereham, and to find out if him coming to Catherine's service was ill intent. So they got, like, a bunch of random people. The witnesses right. indicted friends, relatives, and themselves. One of the Dowager servants remembered seeing Catherine in bed with Francis at Lambeth and was like, yeah, Catherine Tilney can verify my story. And they literally, like, these people don't know how unnecessary their revelations are because this government is interviewing and questioning so many people and they're all saying, like, the same things, basically. So they don't even really care. They're just like, thank you. You can go home. Bye. In front of the other panel of judges, Catherine Tilney, at the literal same time, is talking about what she can remember of snooping around in Lady Rochford's bed, like when Catherine's gone in Lady Rochford's bedroom. So she talks about how she was with Margaret Morton when they were like, what is Catherine doing? Then they interview Margaret Morton, and she is like a gold mine of information. She remembers everything. She remembers how out of character and upset Catherine was and how she ranted about at some of the chamberers at the end of the progress. She remembers the adoring look that she gave Culpepper when they were at the Hatfield Chase. She remembers how they locked the doors night after night when they were at Pontefract. But Catherine still, like, even though she was kind of rude to all of her servants, Margaret still doesn't want to blame her, maybe because she's the queen, and instead describes Lady Rochford as the principal occasion of her folly. So she's like, yeah, it's probably Lady Rochford's fault. Okay. I'm going to say Mr. Harley didn't like Lady Rochford either, because I don't think she was very nice after her husband died. Like, Anne liked her, and I don't think a lot of people really liked Anne either, even before she started having that whole thing with Henry, because Anne was not good with other women. She had male friends.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So fun. The chief victims of the counselors' attempts to get evidence of treason out of their participants and witnesses, these people that are, like, tortured, are Francis Dereham and Robert Damport. Poor Robert Damport is literally completely innocent, and he gets tortured. Not okay.
Poor guy.
Francis is tortured on numerous occasions. Unusually, the records of their imprisonment actually specifically mention torture on several occasions, which doesn't really happen very often because they didn't really like to talk about how they torture people. And it's hard to believe that they were just referring to psychological pressure. So, yeah, they were definitely torturing them. Yay! Between the 13th and the 24th of November, the Privy Council was, like, freaking out because they're trying to figure out what to say to, like, the public about this, because they couldn't afford to be delicate. They had to give enough information, even if people in London thought that it was weird for Catherine's, like, behavior and her life to be as publicized as it was going to be, because the secrecy and inconsistencies in Anne Boleyn's, like, the case against her, had convinced people, even, like, Chapuis, about how she was innocent. Like, people that hated her were like, yeah, she's innocent, because they didn't give them enough information. Now, she was innocent, but, like, that's why people didn't really think that it was true, because they didn't give them any evidence of her guilt. So they're like, we have to give Catherine, like, we got to say how she's guilty.
Right.
In Catherine's case, though, they do have more information, and it's actually plausible. Like, 95% of it is true. So, yeah, they're like, this is real, you guys. This is what's happening. And Catherine's household gets disbanded. They send, like, court away, basically. Luckily, I do like that they did this. They gave them 3 months worth of wages so that they can go get other jobs. So they give them some money because they feel bad that they're getting kicked out because Catherine had indecencies. And they get sent to family or friends. Mary Tudor is kicked out. Like, bye, Mary. Get out of here. She is sent to Edward's household, which was probably really nice for her and Edward because, A, she hates Catherine, so she doesn't really want to stay. And, B, Edward literally loved her, and she was, like, his mom because he had, like, way too many stepmothers before he could even really do anything on his own. So Sir John Dudley, who is Robert Dudley's dad, is asked to escort her there with some of the queen's servants who didn't have anywhere to go. So they're giving them other jobs. So I do like how they treated the servants once they got rid of Catherine's household. Like, way to treat your workers. Good job, Henry. That's it. That's all that you've done well. Then Henry's like, oh, got to figure out what I'm going to tell the governments abroad. Because, you know, you can't just really get rid of a queen and not really tell anyone else what's going on. Like, the other kings do need to know what's happening. But they wanted to carefully control what they sent to foreign courts because they didn't want any contrary versions of events, especially any which might harm Henry's reputation. Honey, I don't think your reputation is going to be any better from this. It's already kind of ruined. I would just, like, you can't come back from this. You're not going to be able to make a wonderful album like Taylor Swift because she didn't do anything wrong. You did. Honestly.
Yeah, Henry.
Yeah, Henry. Also, side note, listen to Taylor Swift's Reputation while walking your dog in the dark because it makes you feel really powerful. Anyways.
Noted.
Yeah, that's everyone's helpful tip for the week. The Earl of Southampton calls on Chapuis personally to confirm what he heard through his secretary. He's like, is this true, Chapuis? And Chapuis is like, yeah, it's terrible. So bad. So sad. Chapuis doesn't care. Chapuis is like, what is happening? What is this country coming to? Is basically Chapuis' thoughts, I would say. Because, you know, he's not English, so he doesn't care. Southampton thought that Catherine might make it out alive. Okay. Although he did tell Chapuis that if she did, it would be despite her Uncle Norfolk, not because of him. So Uncle Norfolk is not helping save her life. We know this is how he works. We saw how he was when Anne was arrested. Why do we think that he's going to be any different with Catherine?
Right.
Like, okay. Norfolk is, like, pissed. He is in such a rage because the scandal completely blindsided him, which, like, fair. It came out of literally nowhere. Like, with Anne, you could see that something was going to happen. Catherine, it was like, what is going on? And so this is threatening to weaken his position. And this is the Renice that he doesn't even really like. Like, he doesn't know her. She's like his little brother Edmund's, like, 10th kid. So he doesn't really care about her. But Chapuis doesn't really like Norfolk. Go Chapuis. Pop off. And he's kind of upset about how Norfolk is treating his niece. Chapuis has more respect for his family, I think, than Norfolk does for his family. So Chapuis is like, what are you doing? In a letter that he wrote to the emperor, he says, the Duke of Norfolk has declared, God knows why, that he wishes the queen to be burnt alive. So fun! So Norfolk wants her to be burned at the stake. What? But Chapuis doesn't think that's smart. So go Chapuis. And we're going to end this with Chapuis being amazing. Yay, Chapuis.
Go Chapuis. Love you.
I didn't like you when we did our Anne episodes, but I love you because of our Mary episodes and also because I love you and the tutors and you're really nice there. And Grace hasn't seen you be really nice to Mary yet. Well, we've seen you be nice to Mary, but we haven't seen you basically be her dad because her own dad abandoned her.
Oh,
so fun. Anyways, that's Yay. Fun and funky fresh. I hope that you all appreciated that we're back and we're not dead. Because Yay. Catherine is about to be. And so are Dereham and Culpepper. Rip.
Oh.
And Lady Rochford. In case you thought anybody was getting out of this scot-free. No one is. And Catherine Parr is now going to have to marry Henry, which then leads to her having Elizabeth in her house. Then she marries Thomas Seymour, which then leads to Elizabeth getting sexually assaulted by Thomas Seymour, which then leads to an even bigger rift between Elizabeth and Mary. Like, this is just a ripple effect. Not good.
Yeah.
So much fun, you guys. Thank you for listening to our episode. Yeah, you should follow us.
Fun.
You should follow us on social media so that you can see how much fun we have when we're not talking about people dying.
Yes, do that.
You can follow us on Instagram at @NotSoBloodyMary_podcast. Maybe I'll post there again now because we're actually posting episodes again. You can follow us on TikTok, @NotSoBloodyMary_podcast as well. I try my very best to be active on there, but, you know, I have school. So sometimes I'm not active on there. Sorry about it. I'm trying to get into university. Anyways, you can follow Grace on TikTok @TheLovely_Bookworm. Yes. Because if you like books, if you don't like books,
I'm cool.
Don't bother.
No.
Don't even, like, leave right now. But also don't follow Grace's TikTok because you'll be very bored if you don't like books.
Or do follow it and just never watch my videos.
Yeah, but you should like them because what's the point in following if you don't like videos?
For followers.
That's a shout out at all of our followers that don't like our videos. It's a dig at you. Yeah.
Okay. One of the videos came up on my For You page today, I'll have you know.
Really?
Yes.
Like one of our TikTok ones?
Yes.
Which one?
The one you were like, it was the trending sound. I forget. It was something about, I don't remember now.
Actually, I haven't been on our TikTok today. So sad. Well. I did make a TikTok with Juno the cat, though.
I love Juno.
I know, me too. When he's not hitting me in the boob. Anyways, friends. Grace, what should they do today?
I think today you should look at pictures of puppies and be jealous that you don't have one as cute as mine.
I'm gonna start crying. You guys, Grace hasn't let me see her puppy yet.
It's not my choice, Quinn.
I know. I'm writing an angry email to your father as we speak. That's not true. I don't actually have his email address.
Do you want it?
No. No. I feel like I have his phone number somewhere, though.
Probably do.
We'll text him angrily. I won't, guys. I have a fear of confrontation.
We know.
I don't think all of them know. Some of these people are new. Anyways, good friends and gentle people, check back in soon. I don't know when, for another episode where I think we'll be done with Catherine Howard because there's not that much of her life left.
Yay.
Yay. And then I don't know what's happening after that. I do actually have a list of people that we're going to do, but I don't know which one of them we're going to do next. So I don't know, friends. Have a great rest of your day, week, month, or even your year. But not, like, we're not leaving this another month. I'm just saying have a great time.
Have an amazing day.
Have a great day. And remember that when you wake up in the morning, if you feel like this is going to be a bad day, you need to tell yourself to shut up. Because your mindset is what makes it a good day or a bad day. And you got to, like, you can just keep going because there's light at the end of the tunnel. That's my Miss Zega wisdom for the day.
Love it.
You make decisions in your life. Don't let other people run it for you.
That was very inspirational.
Yeah, I love you, Miss Zega. I'm going to actually start crying when I don't have mindfulness anymore. If you're listening, you need to do more mindfulness so that I don't start crying when I don't have mindfulness anymore. Anyways, friends, have a great time. We love you very much. Hugs and kisses. I don't know what else to say.
Unless you don't like physical touch, and then we'll give you flowers.
No, I'll give you finger guns from across the room.
That's cute. I like
that. Yeah, that's all I really have to say. Oh. No. Yeah, I'm tired. Bye, everybody. We love you very, very, very much.
Bye.
Bye.